Good. If you've got your Bibles or your device, whatever floats your boat, go to John. Chapter 12. Send to church. There's a Japanese Lutheran pastor. His name was Kazuo Kitamori, and he published a famous groundbreaking book called Theology and the Pain of God. Theology and the Pain of God. It was published in 1946. And Kitamori's book, Theology and the Pain of God, was published soon after Hiroshima. Or Hiroshima, depending on how you pronounce it. And he said this, he said, "We are living in an age of God and pain. The world today seems to be stretched out under pain." In the context of Hiroshima, he would write that we are living in an age of God and pain. In a similar era, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who many are familiar with, from his Nazi prison cell, reflected that only the suffering God can help. Only the suffering God can help. So when we begin to unpackage the idea of growing deeper through suffering, we need to understand that a God has gone before us that himself knows and understands what suffering is. I don't have the capacity this morning to unpack that much more. You can read Jürgen Moltmann, who's written another book that deals with this same theme. Because I believe that God has called us, or is calling us, into a deeper walk with Jesus. And so today we're going to be going deeper through understanding suffering and what God teaches us through that. Great book to read, Job. Heavy book to read. I'm pleased you got some help with that. It's just a really good reflection. So maybe out of today you go there. Last week we considered going deeper from John 6, where the disciples were caught in a storm. And you remember the storm, they were fearful for their lives when they thought they saw a ghost walking on water, but it only turned out to be Jesus, which is perfectly normal. And they had a surprise. And Jesus ever surprised you like that in the midst of the storm, met you in a most unusual way? It was Peter that we noticed that responded to the Lord's cry to step out into the deep, and he got out of the boat and onto the water. And again, out of that understanding, we talk about what it is to go deeper. That's what discipleship is all about. It's about going deeper in our relationship with God and with each other, becoming more like Jesus in every possible way. Our catch line is following Jesus and fulfilling his mission. And from our little introduction, particularly from Bonhoeffer and also Kitamori, we understand that God understands our suffering. And we could just about stop there, but we won't. We won't keep you too long. I know it's warm in here. But I mentioned last week, in looking at what it is to go deeper, some of Gottman's material on seven principles of making marriage work. You say, "Tony, where are you going now?" So if you weren't here last week, I pulled that up. And the first four of those are really good. We talked about enhancing your love map, nurturing fondness and admiration, turning towards each other and letting your partner influence you. And I asked the question, what would it be like if we took those first four, and by the way, it would be helpful if you applied them into your marriage relationship too, by the way, if you are married and in a relationship. They're really good four principles about enhancing your love map, talking about a deeper understanding, a knowledge of each other, nurturing fondness and admiration. A rewarding relationship is grounded on the belief that your spouse is worthy of honor and respect. And turning towards each other. In marriage, people periodically make bids for your affection. And it's what you do with those bids for your affection. We either turn towards it or we turn away. And let your partner influence you. Again, that has to do with power and respect. So I ask the question, if you apply those four to your relationship with God, I reckon they'd be a good help in what it is for us to be growing deeper. Over the past year, we looked at, in what way have you come to know God in new way or a new depth? The second one was, over the past year, has your fondness and worship of God grown? Over the past year, how have you responded to God's affection? Or how has God been the key influencer in your life over the past year? So that sort of laid the foundation for where we're going. And over this summer, we're going to try and pull these threads together. And we're using the Gospel of John, which I mentioned before, is shallow enough for a child to understand. That's the beauty of the Gospel of John. Or it's deep enough that the heaviest theologian's not going to fathom the depths of. The Gospel of John is a great book to go to if you're asking the question about God and about whether or not you want to be a follower of God. John, the disciple of Jesus, is a great book to go to because it's shallow enough. All of us can understand something, but it's deep enough. And it reveals to us Jesus. And I believe that God is calling us again to go deeper. But have you considered what it means for us to go deeper through suffering? Suffering is not something that you or I would normally choose to take us deeper into our relationship with God, but it can and it does. A Canadian psychologist, Jordan Peterson, some of you be familiar with his work, he just says, life is suffering, so get your act together. I think we need a little bit more than that. Don Carson, at a conference I was at in talking about suffering, he said, if you live long enough, you will suffer. The only thing that will prevent you from suffering is if you don't live long enough, in which case you will cause somebody else to suffer by being bereaved. I tell you what, it's a depressing way to start a message in a conference. Suffering, though, in research, it's a top question that people want to ask God. They want to know, why is there suffering? In fact, John Dixon, an Australian theologian and historian, wrote a book nearly 20 years ago. It's titled, If I Were God, I'd End All the Suffering and Pain, Struggling and Evil, Suffering and Faith. Struggling with evil, suffering and faith. He doesn't quite answer his question, but it's the question that we hear so often. Why didn't God merely create a world when suffering and evil didn't exist? Well, the answer is actually God did. In Genesis 1, we read there where it says, God saw that he made, that all that he made, and it was very good. When God created the world, it was good, and there wasn't suffering. We just happened to mess it up. People say, well, couldn't he have just made us do what we were meant to do? But the thing is, you and I don't like sort of interventionist God, and we don't like to be clones of that God. We like to have this thing called free choice. So he gave us that, and guess what? We made the wrong one. So it's the philosophical argument goes round and round in circles. But that's not where we're going today. When we're talking about suffering, we're talking about more than just mere inconvenience. Consequences of bad choices or a lack of entitlement. You know, like when you go to the post office and you can't get the car parked right outside. That's not the level of suffering that we're talking about. In fact, as I was looking at this and I looked at the suffering in the world today, I thought, I'm not sure I've ever really suffered. Now, there have been times that have been really difficult. When My dad passed away, he was only 63, but I'm not sure. There's a grief with that, and suffering is about grief. I remember when Mike Mills said, "Tony, we're going to have to get you a lawyer." That wasn't a good, that wasn't a high point in my ministry life. It wasn't to do with me, by the way, but anyhow, something else. So I'm not sure, being a white, fairly middle-class Australian, I know the depth of suffering that we see, particularly in other people's lives, and compare that with, say, we had Graham pray with us last week about asylum seekers within Australia. I compare my life and level of suffering with more than 1,000 asylum seekers in Australia that are held in oppressive detention centres. For some of them, in excess of 5 to 10 years. With not a crime, for some people you'd get more time put away or less time put away running over someone with a motor vehicle. These people are suffering, and then you've got a whole other group, about 20,000 in limbo in Australia, with no prospects of a happy future, no citizenship or family reunions, no access to Centrelink or Medicare, or permission to study. I think that's a level of suffering that is deep. And I don't want to lessen any of our sense of suffering here, if that's been your experience of things that you've gone through recently, particularly in the last 12 months. But the scriptures abound with this theme of suffering. It begins in the book of Genesis. In the book of Exodus, you see God's people who suffer as they wander in the wilderness for 40 years. You come to the book of Jeremiah, written 600 years before Jesus, and he's so upset with what his nation are going through that he's referred to as the weeping prophet. Then you come to old mate Job, and he's another story. Who needs friends like that? Or a wife who says, "Curse God and die." The psalmist says in Psalm 31, "Be gracious to me, O Lord, for I am in distress. My eye is wasted from grief. My soul and my body also, for my life is spent with sorrow and my years with sighing." You know, two books in particular in the scriptures focus on suffering, Book of Hebrews and Book of Peter. And the theme in the book of Peter is not just suffering, it's also hope. So if you want to go deep in the area of suffering, read the book of Peter, the epistle. Because it's this dual theme of hope in the midst of suffering. How can we go deeper? Let's have a look at John 12. And I'm not going to unpackage all of this. There's just an image that I want to have come out of this that we'll be able to take away with us. John 12, and it's really 24 to 41, but we'll just read a part of it. In verse 20, it says, Jesus says, "Now my soul is deeply troubled." That's a deep sentence. This is the creator of the universe. As a human being, he says, "My soul is deeply troubled, distressed." Verse 32, "And when I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw everyone to myself." He said this to indicate how he was going to die. The crowd responded, "We understood from Scripture that the Messiah would live forever. How can you say that the Son of Man will die? Just who is this Son of Man anyway?" And Jesus replied, "My light will shine for you just a little longer. Walk in the light while you can, so the darkness will not overtake you. Those who walk in the darkness cannot see where they are going. Put your trust in the light while there is still time, then you will become children of light." After saying these things, Jesus went away and was hidden from them. But despite all the miraculous signs Jesus had done, most of the people still did not believe in him. This is exactly what Isaiah the prophet had predicted. Lord, who has believed our message? To whom has the Lord revealed his powerful arm? But the people couldn't believe, for Isaiah also said, the Lord has blinded their eyes and hardened their hearts, so that their eyes cannot see and their hearts cannot understand. They cannot turn to me and have me heal them. Isaiah was referring to Jesus when he said this because he saw the future and spoke of the Messiah's glory. It's a wonderful text. The context of that is that Jesus has just had his arrival in Jerusalem, where they were ready to call upon him as king, and he pulled away from them. And he announces what the future for him would be, that he would be crucified and that he would die. And he makes that ominous statement in there that with all the signs, all the miracles that had taken place, and Lazarus back earlier in John had been raised from the dead, all of the things that Jesus had done, their hearts were still hard. Sound familiar? It's what we talked about last week, hardness of hearts. By the way, in case you're struggling with the idea that God had hardened their hearts so they couldn't believe, that's a deep theological one. And we're not going to camp there for too long today, but just for you to understand. Remember I mentioned calluses last week? I got calluses on my thumb. You rub that enough, you'll develop a callus and your heart will go hard. That's the idea that these people had every opportunity to believe in what God was doing. Same as Isaiah's people back in his day, they had every opportunity to respond to the mercy of God, but they opted not. And eventually, out of their hardness of heart, God hardened their heart, and they didn't respond. But out of this text, you find earlier in John chapter 12, just simply those words, with Lazarus's death, Jesus wept. Read that in the context of suffering and God. Like where we began, we have a God who understands our suffering. He understands grief. But verse 37, but despite all the miraculous signs Jesus had done, most of the people still did not believe in him. You know, there's nothing like suffering to take us deeper. When I mention that to you, what do you think about? Just about guaranteed there's some level of suffering or difficulty that is either happened or is happening at the moment in your life, that you think or you feel or you connect with this idea of suffering, or somebody that you know is going through that experience. These people had the opportunity to go deeper, but their hearts were hard, and it was a faith issue. That's a key issue for us going through suffering. That is an opportunity amidst the difficulty of what we are going through to actually grow and believe that God is there with us in the context of our suffering. And not only that he is there with us, but he understands, because he is a God who has suffered. That's why I began where I began. Because the Greeks had the view that God wasn't a God who could suffer. It's complicated, but that was their view. Because if we were to have a God that could suffer, then that means that he is not all-powerful, because something outside of himself impacts upon him, which means that's a weakness. So for the Greeks, their whole philosophical framework was that they could not worship a God that suffered. That's why Jesus is so confronting, because he is a God who suffered. And God knows suffering. So when we are in the seat of suffering, for us it becomes a faith issue. Do we trust God with our suffering? Or do we try and take back control? In our reading, we also see how Jesus himself was readying himself to suffer for the sins of humanity. Verse 27, now my soul is deeply troubled, and when I am lifted up from earth, that's not his ascension, it's his crucifixion, I'll draw everyone to myself. And he said this to indicate that he was going to die. You know, these words were spoken some 700 years prior by the prophet Isaiah. And here's the image that I wanted to bring for you today in helping us to journey through suffering, is that the image from Isaiah 52 and 53 is the image of the suffering servant. And these words were written 700 years before Jesus, where it says in Isaiah 52, his face was so disfigured, he seemed hardly human. From his appearance, one could scarcely know that he was a man, 52:14. There was nothing beautiful or majestic about his appearance, nothing to attract us to him. Verse 3 of chapter 53 said, he was despised and rejected, a man of sorrows, acquainted with deepest grief. In chapter 53, verse 5 and 7, 10, uses the words wounded, crushed, oppressed, afflicted, crushed with pain. We have a suffering God. The interesting thing is that the words that Isaiah used are then used seven times in the New Testament to refer to Jesus. So Isaiah, in this writing in chapter 52, 53, writes prophetically 700 years down the track. We know it's not in reference to Israel as a nation. Some try and refer to it as that because of the personal pronouns used. It's referring to a person, the suffering servant, and this suffering servant is Jesus. And even with that in the foreknowledge, Jesus still came and was born as a human and would offer up himself for us and for our sin. This was the suffering God. John uses the motive most often used in the New Testament of the Lamb of God. And of course, we know that the Lamb would die. In the context of the suffering servant, John focuses on the unbelief of the people. That they had every opportunity to believe. They had the word already there from Isaiah. They knew that because they had this idea of who this Son of Man was to be. But what it wasn't to be was a Son of Man who was going to suffer and die for their sin. It was one who was going to be a king and remove them from outside or from under Roman rule. You see, Israel at the time was suffering. They weren't free. And this Jesus was interested more than their physical or their national suffering that they were enduring. He was interested in the spiritual suffering, the darkness of their heart. And that's why John speaks into that. And he does. Isaiah 53 verse 1, John quotes, this was to fulfill the word spoken by the prophet Isaiah. Now the writer by the name of Balcom, he said, only a suffering God can help. Our God is a God of suffering. So how can we go deeper through suffering? Remember Paul's prayer, Philippians 3 verse 10, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection. We're good with that bit. That's what we want. But then he says, in the fellowship or of his suffering, to share in his sufferings, becoming like him in his death. He's not saying that we go and die like Jesus did and be sacrificed because of our sin. No, he's not saying that. But there's an association there of what it was to suffer. And he's already said in Philippians 1 verse 9, two chapters earlier, for it has been granted to you that for the sake of Christ, you should not only believe in him, but also suffer for his sake. You see, that's why I said, I'm not sure I know the level of suffering that's often talked about in the scriptures. Now, the friends that I met with in China a number of years ago, they knew what suffering was. My translator over there was a missionary to Muslims in the northwest of China, where a number of her compatriots simply just disappear, never to be seen again. She didn't talk much about her work there because I was probably a security risk for her. That's suffering. Or where the government just shuts the door to your church and says, sorry, you're not meeting anymore. We sort of had that in Australia last year, didn't we? We sort of wedged our way around that. But suffering, and Paul actually says here that it's been granted to you to suffer for his sake. You see, it's in the cauldron of suffering where belief and behavior have synergy. It's in the cauldron of suffering that belief and behavior have synergy. We often understand theological truth in our mind, but there's a gap between understanding it intellectually and what we know in our experience. And so guess what happens with suffering, or when life gets hard, and it will, is that we then have the opportunity to fall back on what we believe and know and understand. But we don't always do that. Sometimes we come and God becomes the villain for us, because all of a sudden life is not all roses like we expected it to be. Tim Keller, in his book Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering, said, modern secular culture says, this life is all there is no afterlife, there is no soul, and all happiness has to be found right here. And so the meaning of life is to be happy. Then he says, well, if that's your meaning of life, then suffering destroys it. Because it's really difficult to be happy when you're suffering. And this is why the connection here with Jesus and the suffering servant and Isaiah and their unbelief is important for us. Because suffering can allow us to go deeper with God in understanding who He is as a God who suffered, and a God who knows our suffering, and a God who is present in the context of our suffering. I like Tacey, where he's an Australian writer in Victoria. He, and I've mentioned it before, he wrote about post-secular culture, because Tim Keller's book's already out of date, and it's only 10 or 15 years old. He was writing about a secular culture. Tacey writes about a post-secular culture where suffering drives us to look for meaning outside of ourselves, to a supreme being, perhaps, who has suffered, that understands our suffering and is present. You see, secularism says there is no God, there is no afterlife, and that has sold our culture and our nation short, because it's been found to be wanting. So when difficulty comes, you've got nothing to fall back on, because at the end of the day, we only have this. And so we do our best to be happy and to get through this. And what suffering does is tears that apart. So what post-secularism says is that this is not all there is. There's something else. It's like, congratulations. That's what God's been telling us all the time. And so for post-secularists, when we go through suffering, we can understand God in the context of our suffering, that He is a suffering God. He knows our suffering, and He is there with us in our journey. You see, a couple of the difficulties with suffering is that suffering is not a part of our plan. Who of you, when you made your New Year's goals, if you did you include suffering in there? I've got to confess, I didn't. I'm not real big on New Year's resolutions anyhow, but I didn't include suffering in there. But suffering is not a part of our plan, because we like to be in control. And what suffering does is takes control away from us. And we also have this idea of entitlement, that we think that I don't deserve to suffer. Well, you tell that to a lot of other people in third world countries where they just were born where they were and their life is really, really hard. But we seem to have this idea that I don't deserve this, whatever this might be. C.S. Lewis, and he's one who understood suffering as he journeyed with his wife and as she would die, he said, God whispers to us in our pleasures. He speaks in our conscience, but He shouts in our pain. And they were words written with understanding. He said, God whispers in our pleasures, but it's in our pain that he shouts. It's in our pain and his suffering that we have the potential to go deeper with God. And so as we close, you've been very gracious because it's warm as well. So let me come back to our four relational Gottman thingies. It's a technical term. First one, enhance. This is your love map. So through suffering, know God in new ways, in new depth. Because that's what a love map is that you get to know your partner so well. You know what their favorite colors are. You know who their friends are. You know their dreams and their images. Enhance your love map with God through suffering, that as you do that, you know him in new ways, new depth. Nurture. Allow suffering to deepen your affection and worship of God. Allow suffering to deepen your affection and worship of God. I've told you in the past the background of the story of the John Mark McMillan song, where he talks about, he is jealous for me. That song is written out of a 2-year journey of pain where one of his best mates was killed in a motor vehicle accident on the way to a gig. He struggled with God for 2 years. And here's what happened. Out of that pain, out of that suffering, he deepened his affection and worship of God. Because sometimes what we can do is turn the other way. We say, if that's what God is really like, why did he allow me to go through this? And sometimes that's a response that we have to navigate through. It's an okay question to ask. Job did that. His friends certainly challenged that. Third one, turn. In the midst of suffering, lean into God's affection for you. Because again, the lyric of that song, he is jealous for you. Remember that your partner, if you're in a marriage relationship, or you might have a boyfriend, a girlfriend, whatever it might look like, they are doing things in your life that they are wanting your affection, so they're dropping these things out there, and you have the opportunity at that point to either turn in towards them or to turn your back on them. And we can do that with God in suffering, where it is, we've just got so many questions unanswered, that there's pain there, and instead of turning into God in his affection, we turn our back on him. And he doesn't go away. He's still there. He's still wanting your affection. He is still jealous for you. He is still there with you in your pain. And he still understands. And then the fourth one is influence. Allow the pain of suffering to take you deeper with Jesus. Allow the pain of suffering to take you deeper with Jesus. Story of my previous pastor's wife in Tassie, I'm talking going back 35 years. She struggled all of her life with arthritis. And when she turned, it was her head like this. I didn't know when she was in pain, her husband could. Her fingers were eventually ended up like this, so did her feet. And she was in pain every day. Post-childbirth. And I can tell you that the story, that was an influence in her life in taking her deeper with Jesus. It really did. It was through that suffering that there's just an absolute depth about. So for us to go deeper today, it's not an easy one, deeper through suffering. Father, I'm thankful that you have an understanding, more than an understanding. You know suffering. And it's not a sign of a weak God, but a God who is of great grace and mercy. Because we are the cause of your suffering. and yet you chose to love in the expression of your Son, Jesus Christ, who would be marred, who would be crushed, who would be a man of sorrows, wounded, oppressed, afflicted for us. So, Father, I pray particularly for those here today who are going through seasons of suffering. This may be a long journey for them. Lord, may they have Jesus in flesh, people like us here that are walking alongside them, and we do have people suffering in our fellowship. And so many are not just praying, they're walking with them. Father, for these dear ones that are in deep valleys, meet them there. Allow them, Father, to go deeper with you. In those days where they can't take any more, pick them up and carry them. In those days when they turn their back toward you, just embrace them. Father, and when they look at who Jesus is, may they know he understands and he's there with them. We pray this for each of us. We don't know what the rest of today will bring, but we know that you are there, and so we seek you in Jesus. Amen.